When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it is Trags, Mike Petralia back with the latest episode of the Jungle World Podcast, powered by CLNS Media and Prize Picks, North America's largest daily fantasy sports platform. This is one of the most exciting times of the year on the calendar, on the sports calendar, on the NFL calendar, you name it. And I thought, who better to bring in here on the Jungle World Pod and discuss all things Bengals and the NFL related to the upcoming selection program Thursday through Saturday in Detroit, the NFL draft, as it is also known. Then Charlie Goldsmith of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Charlie, thanks for taking time out. You've been a busy, busy guy getting ready for the draft, I trust.
I'm ready to go. I'm all the hay is in the barn. I'm ready to go.
You know, with that in mind, my desk right now is a crap show. There is paper all over my desk trying to keep track of big boards and then different positions that the Bengals may go and other positions that certainly are hot topics, the quarterback position for one, coming into this NFL draft. What are you looking forward to the most on starting on Thursday night?
Really, the unpredictability between 1 and 18. Usually, you know, very specific, you know, it's much easier to connect teams with needs and segments of the draft. Right. And 1 through 9 is a, you know, a distinct group. And then there's a distinct group 10 through 20. This year, it feels just so much more fluid. There could be a lot more movement. There could be a lot more unexpected picks. All of the offensive tackles and all of the wide receivers makes it, you know, how does one team view one guy versus another? There's going to be a lot more discrepancy there, I think, even with the quarterbacks, than we've seen in previous years.
When talking with Mike Potts, the director of college scouting, on Tuesday, and Zach Taylor on Monday, did you get a sense of not necessarily any direction that they're heading, but what they prioritize going into this year's draft?
Yeah, I'm ready to say the first cliche of the podcast, but the Bengals do have a track record of taking the best player available.
Yeah.
No one expected. You know, if we were doing this podcast in 2022, we wouldn't have said the name Dax Hill too much. If we were doing this podcast on this day in 2023, we wouldn't have said the name Miles Murphy too much either. They, I think, do a very good job of being in a situation from a roster perspective, a depth perspective, a lack of position of need perspective, to where they really do let kind of, you know, the draft and the board come to them. And again, that's a cliche, but the Bengals have a track record of getting guys they had, you know, much, much higher on their big board than their designated pick at the pick they got. And then this year, it just so happens that, you know, the Miles Murphy or the Dax Hill of 2024 could hit them at a position of need at offensive tackle.
Here's the other thing that I think going into this draft that a lot of Bengal fans want from this draft. They want a starter right away. And ironically, at the position of need, they may or may not get that at offensive tackle. And offensive tackle probably is not going to come in and start right away, but certainly could be impactful as the season progresses. We saw that with Cordell Volson a couple of years ago. He certainly became a bigger force on the offensive line and obviously turned into a rookie starter. But I think a lot of Bengal fans want to see the Bengals make an impact if indeed they go tackle in the first round at 18.
Yeah, I guess the question is, what sort of impact? Like, if you took, say, you know, Johnny Newton, that's a guy who I could guarantee would play 25 snaps or so a game right from the jump, and he'd have a role. But, you know, if everyone stays healthy, he wouldn't be starting, and there's definitely a much less realistic path toward that guy becoming a full-time starter with the Bengals at full strength. There is a scenario where, you know, it's week 8 and, you know, who knows Trent Brown, how he's doing at that point of the season. Could a first-round pick challenge Trent Brown and become a starter who takes over midseason? Like, those types of scenarios exist to become a full-time starter at offensive tackle, even with a full-strength roster, but not necessarily those snaps right away. Defensive tackle, you have snaps right away, but there really isn't a path to become a full-time starter until down the road.
All right, talking with Charlie Goldsmith of the Cincinnati Inquirer, doing a great job covering the Bengals and all things NFL. He also covers the Cincinnati Reds, but that's another podcast, a different podcast for maybe a different week, Charlie. We'll get to you eventually down the road this summer. But anyway, we're sticking with football. This is the Jungle World podcast, and I want to tip the cap to Dane Brugler. I had him on, had the privilege of having him on last week to preview the draft using his Beast, the Beast on The Athletic. And I'm sure, obviously, you're very, very familiar with the Beast and use it as a great resource. I want to go over the top five names in offensive tackles that he has. And Joe Alt will not be available to the Bengals, but Olu Fashanu, J.C. Latham, Talese Fuaga, and Amarius Mims. Of those four players after Joe Alt, who makes the most sense for the Bengals and why?
J.C. Latham is just a walking checklist of categories the Bengals look for any position, categories the Bengals look for offensive tackle. You look at his experience and his, you know, playing time at a huge pedigree program in big games. You look at the size, the frame, the ability to play downhill, to execute a gap scheme, to get to anchor, and to just win with power as a pure pass blocker. Checks every box so much that, you know, he was taking visits, I believe some visits for teams with top 10 picks as well. So this is a guy who's clearly made a name for himself. Number two on my board then is Amarius Mims. He I think, is the best pass-protecting right tackle in this year's draft. And if I'm the Bengals, you'll take that. As they say, that'll play in terms of a skill set. The only ding is, you know, lack of experience. But some of the most impressive tape in this class, too, those eight games were as impressive as any eight-game stretch that J.C. Latham or Olu Fashanu or anyone like that had. So, you know, those are two names I definitely have bolded on my big board.
Troy Fa'utanu out of Washington. Not a tackle, but Dane Brugler brought him up, brought his name up specifically as somebody to keep an eye on, an impact offensive lineman that certainly could be on the Bengals board if things were to break a certain way or the Bengals perceived him as the best remaining name on their big board. Do you, have you paid a lot of attention to him?
I have him. Let me count. One, two, three, four, five. Fifth okay. on my realistic big board for the Bengals, right behind Brock Bowers. So often with offensive tackles, we use versatility as a ding. Oh, you know, he might have to go to guard. I think Fatanu's a real exception. I think the versatility isn't just, oh, he could play tackle. I think he could play tackle and he could play guard. You look at two, like he is, you know, he's not as big as J.C. Latham, but he really makes up for that in interesting ways with his play style, with his athleticism, just with the overall kind of chip on his shoulder that he plays with. He's a guy who definitely plays with that approach, even though he doesn't have the raw strength. He does have the raw athleticism. He is a dynamic presence as a, you know, a run blocker and a pass blocker. He brings a lot to the table. You know, he's probably a top 12 talent in an average draft. And to get him at 18 definitely could be a good scenario for the Bengals.
Mike Petralia, Trags here. I want to tell you about Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on all the action while you watch your favorite sports and, of course, players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. You can win now up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard that right, with as few as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. This week for me, I'm taking Kevin Durant for more than 28 points and Trae Young for more than 10 assists. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Sticking with the offensive line theme, in this week's newsletter that Charlie has on the Cincinnati Inquirer, what the Bengals strategy adding Orlando Brown Jr. and Trent Brown shows about the 2024 draft. Explain.
So the Bengals didn't wake up one day and say, we're going to create the best, the biggest offensive tackle duo in football. But in 2022 season, there we go. Some things, you know, free agency, that was chaotic. We all know that story. Orlando Brown ends up not having an opportunity to go back to the Chiefs. He's looking for a new team. The Bengals hated going up against him. They bring him into Cincinnati, and there's one bookend anchor, massive tackle. Then at the end of this past season, the Bengals needed a right tackle position to need. Best player on their board was Trent Brown, who is even bigger than Orlando Brown Jr. And I see a very specific situation going in this year's draft. It's not like they're saying you got to get a big guy, even though they do kind of have a bit of a preference towards that type of player. When you look at, you know, different situations and different scenarios that could play out, there's such a realistic possibility that the highest rated player on their board, the best fit for their scheme, the best fit at a position of need, is one of these massive offensive tackles who, on top of everything, really fits what they're looking to do. Like, they've recognized that, you know, since they prioritize efficiency out of the shotgun run game, these bigger offensive tackles help them out more there. And then since Joe Burrow is able to get rid of the ball so quickly and so, you know, efficiently with the way he does it, and since they have wide receivers who can win so quickly, if you have pass blockers who can hold up for 2.5 seconds and you know guys can't get around you in that frame, right, the Bengals have won a lot of games with that strategy. So that gives kind of an extra bump towards the big offensive tackles off their board, but they already were higher on their board in the first place.
Okay, you also mentioned this, a highly under-discussed Bengals question regarding a player we've already talked about a couple of minutes ago, and I want you to explain what that highly under-discussed Bengals question is.
So I think in an ideal world, if I were coming up with a plan for Dax Hill this season, I would rotate really all four safeties based on very hyper-specific matchup and game situations. I don't think the Bengals have that luxury right now, because if the Bengals played a game today, their backup outside corner would be Allen George. Not like Allen George. I like him a lot. Allen George has been a very comfortable.
I'm aware of this, by the way. Yes.
Allen George is a very comfortable fit on the practice squad. Allen George hasn't been a guy the Bengals have shown confidence in as a number four corner.
Right.
It's such a glaring need that you would need Dax Hill to be your number one outside corner. If this were the roster the Bengals were going into the season with, I would just put Dax Hill in the cornerback room right now. So the question is, how high of a corner do they need to take? Maybe how many corners do they need to take to feel comfortable with having Dax at safety? For example, if you take a corner in the third round, in the fifth round, all right, Dax, stay at safety, you're good. If you take a corner in the second round, you know, that might be enough. You add in another Sidney Jones and Dax can stay at safety as well. But if the only corner you add is a fifth round corner, I think by necessity, really, you need to move Dax Hill over to outside corner.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. I really do. And I'm, because you brought it up, I want to go over my own mock where I have the Bengals taking a corner, as a matter of fact, with their second pick in the third round. That would be 97th overall. It's a comp pick. But Kamari Lassiter, corner out of Georgia, he's SEC tested, obviously, has the pedigree of a big school. I agree with that, Charlie. I think they could draft a guy who could come in and certainly contribute, at least on the back end, right away.
Yeah, thing is, too, though, to keep in mind, you know, Kamari Lassiter had a very productive career. I think they've had a lot of success with corner as a developmental position by targeting specific arm length and specific speed criteria. I think there are opportunities that Lou Anarumo gets to have with those corners who have specific athletic skill sets. I really like guys later in the third round, Jarvis Brownlee, Chris Abrams, Drain, Nehemiah Pritchett. Those are my favorite guys in that category because they have the most similar profiles to the corners the Bengals have. They also, all three of them, an athletic, aggressive play style, you know, kind of that ball hawk mentality, kind of like the Bengals targeted with Cam Taylor Britt and DJ Turner. So those are three guys at that position who, again, fit the track record of guys they've invested in the past.
Okay, let's move on to the side of the ball that we haven't discussed much at all, and that is the defensive line. The working knowledge is that Bengals have to come out of this draft with one, if not two, defensive tackles who they can plug in pretty much and have them contribute right away this season, at least have one of those, and then maybe have another guy who's rotational. And if the Bengals had Byron Murphy the second out of Texas available to them at 18. What are the odds they take him?
I have Murphy third on my realistic big board behind Latham and Mims. So if those guys are off the board, I think he's a no-brainer. Pick the Bengals. Really, the whole league is looking for that skill set. What's so impressive to me with Murphy is so often size and, you know, lack of size with Byron Murphy, lack of arm length, all that kind of stuff. Usually that ends up really showing up and translating, especially against the run, and especially when you're kind of like a role player on a play, when you're trying to set up the edge rushers to win on the outside as a pass rusher. Murphy, to me, has none of that. Even though he is a bit undersized, he still contributes in all of those more nuanced, detailed areas. And that, to me, is what makes him a no-brainer first-round pick. I like Johnny Newton a lot, too. He's kind of the, like, he's the 13th guy on my board. He's like the last guy who I would have a first-round grade on for the Bengals. But even so, even though he's further down, he doesn't have the versatility and the opportunity to contribute as much in the run. But his overall power, his overall awareness and instinct as a pass rusher that's led to sack production, all of that that he brings to the table makes him a guy you consider in that range as well.
Tavondre Sweat. Obviously, his stock has dropped for off-the-field issues. Chance that the Bengals take a flyer on him if he's available, let's say, in the third or fourth round?
You know, I go with what history tells me. And, you know, that's the reason I like those cornerbacks I mentioned. That's the reason I like defensive ends with a specific profile, running backs. You can do certain things, and that extends with these off-field characteristics. With Tavondre Sweat, I look for, if I'm predicting what the Bengals are going to do at any position, with any scenario, I look at exactly what they've done as the biggest predictor. And that leads me to believe that the Bengals won't be the team that ends up with Tavondre Sweat.
Will or won't be? I'm sorry.
Bengals won't be. No.
Okay, got it. Okay, that makes sense. You know, I think we have an idea of what the Bengals would like to come away with in the trenches. Wide receiver position, and this is a reach, I think, that I mocked. Ladd McConkey, wide receiver out of Georgia. Here's why I love him for the Bengals. He is a clutch playmaker and showed that time and time again at Georgia. Do you think he is a Bengals type prototype player?
I think he's the Bengals prototype for sure. The number one, so the Bengals could go in different directions, and I know they're looking at guys who are different directions. I look at three buckets of types of receivers. I look at pure developmental outside receivers in this class, like Brendan Rice, a great example. Xavier Leggett, a guy I really like. I look at pure slot-only options, Tyler Boyd replacements. That would be a Roman Wilson. That would be a Jalen McMillan. Bigger guys, great hands, savvy feel. Who contribute in that way. My favorite tier of guys are the inside-outside versatility guys. Guys who in 2024 could play the slot, have the savvy in the field and the hands to get open and to win, genuinely beat and separate guys in that role. And then who also have the down-the-field speed, the vertical element, the back shoulder suddenness to be a guy who could take advantage of matchups on the outside in the long run as well. McConkey at the very, very top of that list so much that, you know, it's hard to see him falling that far necessarily. Yeah. But then like Ricky Pearsall could be a much more, you know, sweet spot guy they draft who would fit that exact skill set. Jalen Polk as well. Guys who could do who could play both inside and outside, who you could move Jamar. Jamar's always 1A with what they game plan for, and then fill in this guy around that by having a guy who's really your most versatile receiver. Jamar's your most versatile receiver, but having a versatile receiver as opposed to more, you know, do one thing guys like Charlie Jones, who plays in the slot, and Andre Yoshivash, who has a vertical route tree on the outside.
How do you see Yoshivash coming along in the Bengals system? I find him to be a fascinating case for the Bengals in year two.
There are a handful of routes that he runs like a starter. Back shoulder, vertical, plays down the field, even, you know, stuff where he can kind of box you out on shorter routes and use his size. But he's not there with the versatility element of it yet. He's there in the red zone as well. I should incorporate at the goal line in particular. Yep. He's not there from a big picture versatility, even a yak standpoint. I haven't seen him do a lot there yet. So that's kind of like the mix and match you're going to be doing with him, with Charlie Jones, with Trenton Irwin, with your draft pick. All right, where's Jamar lining up this game? And that's going to move more. Jamar's going to be a much more versatile player this year. Where's T lining up this game? Then having four or five guys who could kind of fill in the gaps. And you will have some plays in your playbook for Yoshivash because he is that good at those specific routes and those situations that I mentioned.
All right, we've spent a good amount of time on the first three, maybe four rounds of the draft. Let's move into the back end, and that would certainly qualify for day three of the NFL draft when rounds four through seven are completed. And a position, Charlie, that I don't think we've heard a lot of buzz about around the Bengals is linebacker. Are there names that stick out to you that the Bengals could identify in the linebacker group?
So they need a linebacker. They need a body, not a body. You know, you don't want to call a player that, but you know, Marcus Bailey played a very, very important role. On special teams, he started that one game against the Chiefs in 21, a valuable player. And then, hey, Devin Harper's their fifth linebacker right now. You know, maybe that could be a competition with the guy as well. I would have a mock draft include a linebacker. The skills I prioritize are overall athleticism, ball production. You know, the Bengals have gotten guys who have forced turnovers, who have had pass breakups, who are good in the passing game, and then have can kind of build up physically to be stronger against the run. And then, of course, the intangibles. You know, Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis Gaither, Marcus Bailey. Yep. They all were captains, intangibles through the roof. So Jalen Ford, Darius, Muasau, and Kalen DeLoke, three guys who on kind of late day three could fit those exact criteria for the Bengals.
So I mocked Steel Chambers, linebacker out of Ohio State. Jokingly, my tag on my mock said the name. How could the Bengals pass at this point? I think he's a potential choice for the Bengals as well. Again, the pedigree, Ohio State. I like, by the way, if the Bengals go with an offensive tackle and maybe a wide receiver in the first two rounds, I like Mike Hall Jr. And Dane Brugler mentioned this name as well. Don't sleep on Mike Hall Jr. What do you know about him, speaking of Ohio State?
You know, I think you got me beat on that one.
In other words, you don't know a lot, or?
I don't.
I only bring up the name because Dane mentioned him, and I think he might be somebody that the Bengals, he's certainly in the top 10 of Dane's defensive tackle, two technique type of guys that could come out and be available to the Bengals. Who knows? At this point, Charlie, we record this and we're about 24 hours out. How much do you think changes on big boards?
I'm still working, but teams big board. I still have, I did say the hay is in the barn, but of course you're always learning more information closer to the draft because I've been working on this for, a couple months. They've been working on this for a couple of years. So they're much later in this process. Debates, their new information that comes in. From people around the league, is there different things you learn about a player's connections or character or right. connections with players who are on the Bengals? Dax Hill, what do you think of DJ Turner? Oh, he's one of your best friends. That's great. So stuff like that can influence just the overall understanding of a player you have heading into the draft. But again, they've been doing this for years and not a lot changes in the final few days.
I also found a couple of things I found interesting about what Mike Potts told us on Tuesday. First of all, the impact Elizabeth Blackburn has on the scouting department. That impress you, what she's able to garner in terms of analytics or research and provide to the scouting department as well as Duke Tobin?
Definitely, talk about versatility. I don't know that there are many versatile, front office ownership level people in the league right now, as much as everything Elizabeth Blackburn is a part of and is playing leading roles with in the Bengals mm-hmm. organization.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And the other thing that stuck out to me about what Mike Potts kind of divulged was the fact that all of the scouts really live locally. And the reason that is helpful to the Bengals is the communication between their scouting department and their personnel department is very, very strong. Almost certainly during the season, on a daily basis, you're having conversations. And as you're putting the big board together, you're having daily conversations. To me, that's a big deal.
And the coaching staff plays a huge role in this. We know the coaching staff played a huge role in valuing Jamar Chase the way they did, valuing T. Higgins the way they did. I'm sure I could come up with a bunch of other examples as well. I remember the way Frank Pollock spoke about Cordell Volson right after they drafted him. Lou Anarumo's specific vision for Cam Taylor-Britt right after they drafted him. Lots of very specific examples of the collaborative process leading to a very specific vision for the players they picked.
All right, we've talked a lot about the Bengals. Is there any team out there aside from the Bengals that you have particular attention focused on starting on Thursday night?
I mean, I'm now fascinated and riveted by everything the Tennessee Titans are doing, just because it's a guy with a Bengals, you know, Bengals background, who's also meshing with a general manager from a different background and a different tree. You know, they're faced with a wide receiver, offensive lineman trade back decision. It's a very familiar territory for the Bengals. How are they prioritizing explosiveness? What is their run game going to look like? Yep. How much do they think they can, you know, go for the upside at wide receiver, say Malik Nabers, because Bill Callahan can develop, you know, more developmental offensive linemen, as well as maybe anyone who's ever coached football. So, you know, Tennessee's in a fascinating spot. What do they believe is the best ecosystem to surround a quarterback who's not Joe Burrow, to make him look as close to Joe Burrow as it gets? Because we know so much of how Brian views this, I'm fascinated to see how he really executes it with his own team.
And given my background, I'm fascinated to see what the Patriots do at three. Do they trade down? Do they try to get a 2-for-1, get their quarterback, but get a star wide receiver as well, a projected number one wide receiver? I know I'm in the minority, so I preface this by saying the following, okay, my disclaimer. I'm in the minority. I would take Marvin Harrison Jr. with number three. The reason being, I think he's the best player and the best likely guarantee that you're going to hit with a first round talent when you take a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. The ownership there, supposedly, based on what you read coming out of New England, wants to take a quarterback. Jaden Daniels probably won't be there, because now what we read, the murmurs are that Daniels will go number two overall to Washington, and that number three, Drake May. What do you think?
If I'm the Patriots, and you make a valid point, if I'm the Patriots, I don't think you'll ever have this good of an opportunity to add a quarterback with this skill set. And when I looked at a quarterback, like, for example, that's why I wouldn't trade up for J.J. McCarthy, because I think you'll have chances, even through free agency, but, you know, definitely chances to trade up in future drafts to get a quarterback who's better than J.J. McCarthy. I think that there is a difference in that net, in that, you know, upper tier. I think the Patriots won't have a top three pick very consistently. Next year's quarterback class isn't as strong as this one. I don't think they'll be in a spot as well to in a spot again, or in the near future, to add a quarterback who can be this dynamic like Drake May, who I have as, you know, the number two quarterback on my board. So some good problems to have, but I definitely would go for the top tier option at quarterback whenever you get the chance.
Anything else you want to promote in terms of your draft coverage, looking ahead to Thursday night? Friday, of course, are rounds 2 and 3, and then Saturday?
Just everything in the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
All right. He is Charlie Goldsmith, does a fabulous job covering both the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cincinnati Reds. And as I mentioned, he will be appearing on a Code Reds podcast, hopefully sometime in the coming weeks as the Reds warm up and stay in the pennant race, or stay in the pennant race, stay relevant, and I think they will in 2024. Let me ask you right now, what do you think of the Reds' start?
The Reds are a good young team that's still in the process of becoming a good team. And you see the flashes. You see young players having breakthrough moments that win them games. And then the cliche line of consistency, you see on such a hyper-specific basis, really. You know, Hunter Green's secondary pitches. Christian Encarnacion strands chasing. Like, there are little areas of everyone's game that they're right. The one little thing away from really tapping into the full potential that they have. They're right knocking on that door. They're good enough now to, you know, stay above 500. And then it's about taking that next step to break through.
There he is. That's why I'm glad I asked you that question, Charlie. Anyway, he is Charlie Goldsmith, does a great job covering the Bengals. Be sure to follow his coverage along with Kelsey Conway's on the Cincinnati Inquirer this weekend. No better coverage in town than Charlie Goldsmith and Kelsey Conway at the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. He's Charlie Goldsmith. I'm Mike Petralia. This has been the Jungle Roar podcast, powered by CLNS Media and Prize Picks, North America's largest daily fantasy sports platform.